call to order the Madison Plains Board of Education meeting, December 15th. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Hurley.
Here.
Mr. Dodds.
Here.
Mr. Butts.
Here.
Mr. Hunter.
Here.
Mr. Morlock.
Present.
Mr. Detweiler and I also present.
Mr. Morlock, would you lead us in the pledge of allegiance, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, we'll go to Section B, Public Communication. We have one person that would like to speak. Anybody else? Ms. Alice Baker, if you'd like to.
Hello, I'm Alice Baker. My address is 13490 Charleston Chillicothe Road, South Soma, Ohio, 43153. And I'm here to discuss something for last school year, the 14-15 school year. And that would be the exams as well as weighted grades. In June of 2014, prior to last school year, this board added language into the parent handbook for both the exam policy as well as weighted grade policy. There was a course added for weighted grades, and also it says classes that are weighted will appear on the transcript for colleges to use either weighted or unweighted grades. For exam policy, it says which have a required end of course assessment graded. That was added by this board. It was seconded by Mr. Butts, passed 5-0. In August, the second hearing occurred and it was passed 5-0. And on December the 10th of 2014, there was no vote for a handbook on that. There was no first reading. Mr. Detweiler says in the audio transcript, there was no handbook presented to the board, but it does say that the board will receive a copy tomorrow. There was some incorrect verbiage and just small changes made will, for example, were the changes. On December the 16th, the entire section of weighted grades was deleted, and that passed. There was no first hearing on that. It just was deleted from the handbook also. There was no change to the exam policy. And I don't know if this is a result of the fact that there was a column that was left off of the report card last year that was there in the 13-14 school year. This was discovered as we were going through different things. Dr. Unger discovered there was an entire column that was left off. So it's possible that this is a result of that, or it's possible that for whatever reason your directives were not followed. So I'd just like some clarification as to what occurred.
Is that a question you're posing?
To the board, yes.
Okay,
so we will defer those questions, that question, for clarity, because I don't know what column you're talking about, so we're going to...
It was the exam column. The exam column.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, you just said column. I wasn't quite sure. So, Tim?
You're talking about the column on the report card.
Yes. Is
right.
That what caused all of these issues to be...
No. That had nothing to do with... You're talking about the handbook and its approval. The handbook and its approval, you're talking about taking a second vote. There is no first and second vote on the handbook. Okay? The handbook is just presented to the board and they vote on it. There's no second vote. That's on board policy. So I'll make sure... Because you were saying second vote...
There's first readings and second readings in other situations.
On policy.
On policy. Not on
handbook. In the handbook, yes, there actually
is. There can be. There doesn't
okay.
have to be.
I was going
to
say. There,
right.
Yeah.
Board policy requires a first and second vote. Handbook does not.
Okay.
So that's why you may not have seen a second vote because we didn't have to represent. Okay. Board policy you do.
Okay.
So to answer that question is there wasn't a second vote. There wasn't the need for one. The handbook at that time was in flux, if you remember, because we had so many changes because we were trying to get it in line with board policy. So we made a lot of changes really fast, it was December of 2014, I think it's the date you put, yeah. So those were the changes that were made. It had nothing to do with the report card. We weren't trying to align the handbook with the report card, if that's your question. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm asking, essentially, why wasn't the board's directive followed? Why did you make the changes in June to have weighted grade policy, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of the school year, nope, never mind, we're not going to do that. I mean, the student's already taking the courses. So what happened?
Alice, ever since you brought this up, it's been something that bothered me on this. I need to go back and look at it. But there was a deal with the weighted grades. The because I think I spoke up on that and said we're going to make another change. Is this the change we want? We just need to go back and clarify what actually happened on all that. Is that okay if we get a chance to investigate it and
as long as it's done, because I mean, I had a meeting in September with Dr. Unger.
Right.
And things have been in flux at that.
And we've been working on that ever since, because as you know, there's a lot of questions working with an outside
right,
entity as to what we can
not.
And can't do.
Right.
So it's not like you've been ignored, because we
oh,
haven't
I,
done
I,
that.
Right.
I want to make
just,
that clear to
yeah.
the board and the public. We have listened to you, and we are trying to make any corrections that we feel we need to make based on board policy and the handbook. And your question is, why did the handbook change? There were a lot of changes to the handbook from that. I think you quoted, what, December the 16th is the last
that
time
that was the
changed.
Last change.
Right.
But like I said, in
from
the summer
June.
Prior to that, before the school year even began, you amended and added language in for the first and second hearing, and then all of a sudden.
And some of those changes were made to match, because to coincide with our policies that we had. So, and that's why we
right.
went back to policy and said we need to look through all the policies.
One of the
also.
First things I was directed to do was bring the handbook in line with policy, and it was not. And so that's what we did. That's why you saw a slew of changes from August through December, because that's when I came in and we started making changes to the handbook, and that's what was presented to the board. So some of it was different than what you saw in June.
I just wonder right. if that's fair for the students right. that were taking the courses.
Yeah, there was something, and that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it one way or the other, but there was something that, because I can remember bringing that up and making my usual comment about, well, I hope this isn't just the flavor of the month, we're changing something else. There was something about that weighted grade.
And that audio is not available from that date, so you can't listen to the audio.
Which date are you specifically?
December 16th.
Okay.
It's not available.
Yeah, you're right. And again, that was not intentional either. It was just the recorder wasn't working. One out of
time. Oh, yes. That, yes. I remember that night, too.
Dr. Unger's been working on board policy, grading policy for
yes.
5 or 6 months, according to the board policy,
the graduation
policy committee and graduation requirements, because they all wrap together. But,
right.
but we talked several yeah. months ago about the whole grading scale thing,
yeah.
and it was Dr. Unger was.
I can remember when we
well, but. Dr. Unger was, that was all wrapped in with him as far as graduation requirements and
there's the whole reason why we did that.
Right, and right now, the grading committee has got a whole list of things they're working on. Weighting of grades is one. If you recall, we put out a new grading scale, and we said, no, let's not do that because we want to get input, so we shifted over to the grading committee, and that's what they're working on now.
Right.
So there's nothing being done behind the scenes. It's at committee, they're working on it, you know, publicly. So the one thing we can do, Alice, is go back and see on that December 16th the changes from there to June, and then I can recreate why we made those changes. And I don't mean to create something. I mean, since it's not recorded, our discussion, I have to go back and look at what my notes were.
Right.
So,
But that is my biggest issue. Is we need, I'm not talking about going forward. I'm talking about what happened to last year. This is, I mean, if there's corrections that need to be made and corrected transcripts, they need to be made. Because parents and students rely on what you guys say and vote on, and it can't just disappear. I realize maybe you can have just one hearing on it, but you can't just change it in the middle of a school year without repercussions for the students. That's not right.
Okay, thank you. And we will check into that, and Tim will report back.
Yeah,
okay.
I can do that for January.
Okay. We will move to Section C for work session. I certainly would like to take this opportunity to thank Ken Morlock for his dedication to the students and the families of Madison Plains. Your role as a board member at Madison Plains has shown your passion for the students and actually their success and the overall drive to make Madison Plains a better place. We can see that. We appreciate that. We thank you for your service. We wish you well. And we, for you this evening, have a lifetime Golden Eagle Pass.
I enjoyed a lot was when we had the student demonstration.
That's the best part of the board meetings, right? When the kids come
awesome.
In.
Good to see them all.
after the board meetings.
Oh,
I mean, we're,
don't make people count on that.
We'll still be here. So we thank you.
Thank you.
And we welcome our new board member, I guess I should say that in the same breath. So we welcome you and look forward to working with you also. We'll move on to the approval of board minutes.
Madam President, I move that the minutes of the November 17th, 2015 meeting be approved as written.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Do the financial treasures report. Justine, it's on you.
Just a couple things I'd like to point out briefly. Our cash flow analysis, you know, I would like to bring this up. I know it's repetitive, but we are trending along. We continue to trend along as we projected. Not much change or deviation, and aside from the fact that we are doing a little better than what we thought based on that $500,000 that we realized last year in the valuation increase. But the overall curve is following the same curve is what we thought it would.
Todd, which line?
I'm sorry, this line right here is, I don't know if you guys can see that right there, where my arrow is. That's where we are currently. And the one right below it, the orange line on the bottom, is where we projected. Now the concerning thing this year is, you know, we had to add we used to be on this graph, have a $2 million floor. Okay, now we have a $1 million floor because we drop below 2 million this year at this time of year. This is our low point. Again, it's that bat wing effect, you know, where we dip down and then we start to climb back up when we start to get our collections in, which we will do. So we will still be okay this year, but it is starting to dip there pretty low. The other thing that I have on my agenda is a transfer request. And all that is a carryover for Title I that was posted inadvertently to FY15, and should have been posted to FY16. So that's why we have to move those funds from 15 to 16. The other thing I'd like to point out, we will be asking for approval to dispose of some obsolete property. We have a wrestling mat, an old obsolete wrestling mat that's no longer being used, that we're asking for approval to sell. That'll be processed through the online auction site, GovDeals. So we've added our tout back to the homepage. The link is not active right now until we have approval to go ahead and put that up there. But in advance of that, I went ahead and put that in place to remind everybody of where that will be should we have property to dispose of. The value of that is projected to be $500. For that wrestling mat. New, a wrestling mat like that sells anywhere from $6,000 to $8,000. So it's, you know, probably 20 years old or more. It's been reconditioned multiple times, and it's time to move on and free up some space. So we'll be asking for approval for that tonight also. Aside from that, I do have some notes. We will be having our amended appropriations in January. That's when we kind of true up where we are at this time of year for anything we didn't anticipate at the beginning of the year. For instance, we have some preschool services that we had to add for students that came into the district, you know, after we approved the original appropriations. We have some ESL fees, English Second Language bilingual students come in that need services that we had to approve some additional amounts for. And then, you know, just the massaging along the way that we do to kind of make sure that we're in line, our expenditures don't exceed our appropriations. So I'll have those to present next board meeting in January. I'll also have your quarterly athletic update in January. So we'll have that, you know, quarterly update, that full 3 months then in January. We had a meeting, county treasurer superintendent meeting. The county auditor was there. She had mentioned that we should have our amounts and rates here by the end of December. That's what tells us what our effective millage is. So that'll let us know where we're at in relation to the 20 mil floor. If you remember last year, we were at 20.06. And as we get to that 20 mil floor, they can't reduce the effective millage below that. So we can start to generate additional revenue then if that happens. So I'm real interested to see where we're at with that. with that, I think that's all I have for you this evening. Do you have any questions?
Do you expect that to be presented before the end of the year?
No. I think we'll receive it from the county auditor, and we'll approve the amounts and rates at the January meeting when we accept those. But we're kind of, it's contingent on when we receive them from the county auditor.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Move on to Section F.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the November 2015 financial statements be accepted as presented.
I'll second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the Superintendent of the Treasurer, the Board approve the transfer of $3,049 Title I carryover funds from fiscal year 2015 to fiscal year 2016.
Second. Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the Board approve the disposal through GovDeals auction of one wrestling mat, two sections, valued at $500.
I'll second.
Discussion? Hey, when we sell that, what do we do with that? So we get $500. What do you put that in?
It goes in miscellaneous revenue or sale of property.
Okay.
So it's general fund money. It's available to be used for essentially whatever we see fit.
Okay. I just wasn't sure. Thank you. Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. Okay, we will now move on to the superintendent's report.
Thank you very much. Just to tag team on Todd's report, we've had four ESL students this year, whereas in the past, if we had one, it was an unusual year. So we do have a lot of kids enrolling that are English second language students. The superintendent's account and treasurer's meeting, this was the first time we had a all-county official meeting. So all the county elected officials were invited to come. We had, as Todd said, the county auditor was there. We had Bob Hackett came in, the sheriff, several people like that. So had a good conversation amongst the schools with those officials on what they're working on. And for example, the sheriff was talking about wintertime and how they make their calls on whether it's a class one, class two, whatever it is, as far as the weather goes. So very good meeting to have them at. So that'll be a monthly thing that we have now. Board policy review. We've got several policies on here to look at tonight. One I'm going to ask Todd to pull up is the graduation requirements. This is, as Mike pointed out, board policies looked at several times, made several changes to it. Dr. Unger's worked on it long and hard. He would have been here tonight, but he's at his daughter's musical tonight. Several changes. As you walk down through, you see district was added. One thing that is different, we've added both our district minimums and the statutory graduation requirements on the right-hand side. So you have the state's and minimum and then what our minimum is. So you can see side by side within the policy. You scroll on down through and you can see fine arts one unit is scratched out. We'll get to why that is here in a minute. Electives is taken from 5 to 7 units. Business management is also scratched out. We still stay at 22 units. We don't reduce. The state the statutory graduation requirement is 20 units, so we're still 2 above that. We do have more units than most districts in the area. I think Miami Trace is the only one that had more than us. Everybody else was usually sitting at 21 from what I looked at. So if you go to the next page, I said I explained about the fine arts. And it's always in the verbiage. And as you start down through on number one, electives of any combination of the following, and it lists foreign language, fine arts, and then in brackets it says, must complete 2 semesters, which equates to 1 credit, in any of grades 7 through 12, unless following a career technical pathway. Okay, when they came out with that, a lot of schools started going with that, and that allows your students that are going to TOLS, for example, to not have to take a fine arts. Okay, one thing that Mrs. Grigsby pointed out to me, though, this 7 through 12, whether you take it 7th and 8th grade or 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, it has to be high school level. We can't take art in seventh grade and not be high school level and get that credit. So that has to happen. So this is truly, all this is to give you a waiver for those kids that are on a career tech pathway, okay? Because we don't get hung up with kids going to tolls that don't have fine arts, then you have to find a way to get them those fine arts. And again, most of the schools I saw have that waiver in place. Again, I looked about seven of them in the area, and it just makes sense. We still have fine arts, we still value fine arts, all the kids will still take it unless they've elected a career tech pathway. Number two, students entering ninth grade for the first time on July 1st, 2015, are pursuing a career technical instructional track, may complete a career-based pathway math course as an alternative to Algebra 2. Again, this wasn't us creating this language, it came from OSBA, okay? And I agree with that recommendation, and again, those students are on a different path. They're on the career tech pathway, and that has very rigid requirements they have to complete in that path, so this allows them the flexibility to do that. Number three, I will probably modify this. Again, as I looked at other districts, after even after our board policy review committee looked at this, this allows you to get your economics and financial literacy requirement through social studies. Most of the school districts are basically saying you are required to complete the economics and financial literacy. Okay, there's several ways you can get it, not just through social studies. And this, what we've tried to do is write this to say that there's an easier way. You just basically say you have to have the economics and financial literacy, okay? So this language will change a little bit between now and the second reading. Still has the same intent, it's just cleaner language than what this is. Okay. The College Credit Plus, it changed because that's new. You have to include and post-secondary enrollment options because we're phasing out post-secondary and phasing in College Credit Plus. So we speak to both in that section. And then our district does not offer the graduation requirement opt-out. So just a clarification of language. That's not a new section for us. It's just the new language that we included. Okay. So I wanted to make sure we walk through that. If you have any questions, if you're happy to take those, we can do more research between now and the second reading in January. But that's been a long time coming. We wanted to make sure we had that right. The other one that I wanted to go over.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
We currently have a class that will require that will fulfill that financial, what was it called again?
Literacy.
The financial
literacy.
We used to have that business management class, correct? Or
we used to.
Right. I know we don't have that anymore, but
correct.
So, is there going to be a class specifically that will fill that if you take it out of the social studies?
It's not half credit. It's depends on that.
Right. We're not taking it out of social studies. It'll still be included as an option to get it through your social studies, but you can also take it. There's the business management and the ag department, which can satisfy it. I've been pretty open about the fact that I'd like to see us have a business department that has more robust classes that are specific to business. That's the direction I'd like to go. But again, as Todd pointed out, our finances are not allowing us to go in some of the directions we want to go at this point in time. So we're going to try to provide those opportunities for students to get that requirement in a multitude of classes.
Okay.
Is our goal. Okay. Again, we're working to make sure that when they do take a class, it does satisfy this requirement. Just because it says finance or economics in the title doesn't necessarily mean you're satisfying that requirement.
Right.
So that's one thing that our commitment is, making sure for next year that we've got every class that we say satisfies that requirement does. I'm not saying they don't right now, but if you notice, we don't have a lot of students going through the ag department right now taking financial literacy because we want to make sure that when they take it, they get credit for the state requirement. Okay. So, yeah, that's a lot of changes in that policy.
Okay.
The other policy that we're looking at is the admission of inter-district transfer students. This one, basically, I needed to get an interpretation from our attorney on. It's under number 11. Our past practice, and I say past, at least the last, since 2007, we have allowed the superintendent to allow open enrollment students to come in after the last day of September. Okay, that was against our own board policy. But it was also in our best interest if we're trying to increase our enrollment. When the state stopped doing the account week in October, which drove our funding. Now they do it how many times?
Four times a year.
Four times a year. So if we allow students to come in after September, we still get funded for those students. Okay, that was the reason why you didn't do it in the past. So I'm recommending we take out this section altogether, 11, in which it says after the last day of September, it just comes out. Basically, I'll be, as superintendent, I'll be able to allow students to come in any time throughout the course of the year, okay? As long as they haven't got those qualifiers, for example, they didn't get suspended within the last 6 months at the prior school district. There's three qualifiers that we can keep a student from coming here, okay?
So I just add to that, too? It's also important just because our funding goes down as students leave throughout the year now, too, whereas before, if they were here in October, we got that funding all year. And now that funding will be adjusted as those counts are taken throughout the year. So if we have it so that we can lose students but not enroll students, then that's hamstringing us, so to speak. So
this is a cleanup, basically matching policy to what we've actually been doing. So I think we're good. I'm going to move on to number two under my report. Molly Neese, I did receive her letter, her resignation letter. Appropriately dated August 12th matches the date that we'll be hiring her as a long-term sub, and I did get that on actually yesterday, so that's why it was just included yesterday, or you would have had it sooner. So we put it on, sent you a notice, let you know. So that's on there for tonight. Mount Sterling Library Board, Mr. Cisco sent me a notice saying here are the new board members that we're going to appoint, being that we're a district that has to approve all their members. That's all for your approval tonight. He asked if he needed to come and speak. I said, no, I don't believe you do. That's why I asked specifically if there's any questions, because if you had, he's not here. But again, we have to approve this. So, the leave of absence requested by Mrs. McAllister. She's had a long illness that she's been battling. She's taking a leave of absence, asking for a leave of absence for this illness through January the 4th. Again, as I pointed out, the Board of Education for the month of December, since she didn't work in November, will be paying both, you'll be paying her share. Is that correct?
No, the boards will continue to pay our share.
Right. You're paying $800, she's paying her share, which is basically $200, okay? Are you required to do that as a Board of Education? No, you're not. But it's my recommendation we do that, because on January 4th when she comes back, then we're in a position where she'll be coming to work every day. Okay. If we could pull this one up, Todd. The dress code guidelines, if you notice the title's changed. Again, we had a lot of our teachers come to our meeting when we put a dress code policy out. I'm glad they came. Glad they showed the interest, and glad they've worked on it. Since that meeting, the membership's had subcommittees working on their guidelines, and again, they're called dress code guidelines, not policy. This is not to be board approved. This is member driven, and it's going to be member enforced. Okay, the membership will monitor themselves, notify each other when they're not dressed according to their guidelines. At the end of the day, the administration comes in at the very bottom. If you scroll down, Todd. If a member, professionalism committee member, has approached a teacher or a classified employee and said, you're not following our guideline, and they still ignore it, then it comes to the administration, and we will enforce this policy just like it was board policy. Okay. This will be rolled out to the membership by their leadership in the next few weeks. I've asked that our administration, that being the principals, can partner with them when they roll it out. So we're all on the same page. There's no questions about what does professional dress mean and that type of thing. So we're all on the same page. So it's worked very well. They worked very hard. Jennifer and Stormy have put a lot of hours in on this, so it's greatly appreciated. And again, it's not for you to vote on. It's just report out to you that they now have guidelines that they'll be following.
I went through this. I like this. It's cleaner than what we were presented before.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the proper way to go.
I'd agree. And I just let you know, they brought several things and we collaborated, and The one thing that we stressed was brevity, make this as short and sweet as possible, and we did get it down to one page. So. All right. Now, stars of the night up first. Mrs. Grigsby is going to present on curriculum. She's had a busy start to the school year, and lots of things going on. She's going to report out for us.
I'm supposed to share just a little bit about what's going on in the curriculum department, what has been going on so far this year, where we're moving now. It would take me, you'd be here for a couple days if I shared everything, so I'm just going to try to highlight a few items here and make sure that I know how to use it better. All of these pieces are managed through the curriculum department. Everything that you see up there, and probably a few other things that I don't have listed up there also. But these are the big pieces that my work is focused on. And so as you can see the list that's up there, I'm just going to highlight a few of those areas that have been to the forefront so far this school year. One of the big pieces has been communication. As we as a district as a whole have been working on communication, I've been taking on some initiatives to try to increase our communication as well. Recently, I just updated the curriculum department's webpage. There's a lot more things, a lot more items more accessible, and I'll show you that to you in just a moment. And then also I've been putting together a newsletter. It's just a quarterly newsletter. Two issues have gone out so far this year. It's an electronic newsletter. It's called the Curriculum Connection, as you can see. And sometimes it's like 8 or 10 pages long with all that we have to share. But it gets sent out to any of our parents that are on our email address list. Also, it gets shared out to all of our staff and all of our students' email accounts for the fourth grade and on up. They all also receive an email with this. I actually get thank you letters from students on occasion when I send these things out. So they like being informed. Now I want to go to the link. How do I do that?
I can click on
it. Yeah, click on the curriculum department one. Okay, so I'll just kind of give you a little what's here. Over here on the right, you can see all these links. And if you just click right here, the curriculum connections are always there accessible. So if you wanted to go back and see something in issue one or issue two of the curriculum connection, you could see that there. And it pulls up and you can see what we've been working on there. Get back to it? Go through the back button. There you go. Student guides, or parent guides to student success is a publication through the National PTA. But it has lots of information about what the standards are at each grade level and how you can help your kids there. Learning links directs mostly through the Info Ohio website, but some pieces there that parents and students can access. All of our standards are found here on the webpage as well, so you can easily get there. Other pieces that are more new to it, the gifted programming piece, and I'll talk a little bit about that. That's actually another area that we've been doing a lot of communication with, and so we'll be able to see here in a little bit. I'll show you some of the pieces that we've been communicating out in that program. Of course, there's a link to the MPIP, the Madison Plains Improvement Process, and we'll get there later. But also testing information, third grade reading guarantee, there's lots of information that you can find there. Okay, so that's just one of the ways we're working towards communication is keeping that updated. Go on. So as far as the curriculum piece goes, there are a number of things happening with just actually our actual curriculum, what we're teaching. As you can see, and this is actually an image from the first curriculum connection that went out. This is a page from that. Curriculum implementation happens over a three-phase process. First, there's the development of the curriculum, then the actual implementation of the curriculum, and then monitoring and evaluation. Well, these are where we are this year with each of those phases. So we're going to be looking at resources for social studies and fine arts this year, and what we may be proposing to purchase and adopt for our teachers' use. We do have a lot of new science resources that we just are implementing this year for the first time, from grades K through 12. A lot of good work is happening in science. If you went to the, if you happen to read or pick up the Curriculum Connection, the second issue, it is filled with science information, pictures of all the great things that are happening in our science classes. We're really excited about that. And then also we're implementing a new technology program this year in our K to 8 tech classes. As far as monitoring and evaluation, each of these pieces are being monitored this year. We'll be have an evaluation done by the end of the year, just to see where we are with the implementation of those programs and what recommendations need to be made, because those are all areas that we have purchased in previous years, and now we're looking at evaluating how those programs are working for us.
One thing I'll point out, if you don't mind, Karen, is the Vandenkort did recommend having a curriculum council, but you also have board policies directing us to have one. So it brings us in line with board policy. Just another thing, trying to follow board policy in all areas.
So that was the next thing I was going to talk about. Curriculum Council was established this year. And that's a, we've only met twice now. They meet six times a year. That is a group consisting of the administrators and then all of our department chairs. From kindergarten through 12th grade, we have representation. Sometimes a department chair is a grade level team chair, like in K-1-2, and other times they are just a department chair over a larger span of grade levels. So they're meeting, and their focus is to be advising on those issues that come out of the curriculum department, curriculum, instruction, assessment, and professional development. So they've met twice now and have four more meetings to go this year. Testing. In the world of testing, there's testing going on right now, actually. Generally, the state testing has now all moved to the end of the year. However, there is an exception, a couple exceptions to that. One of those is the third grade. Because of the third grade reading guarantee, Ohio has maintained the policy that all third graders get two chances at that literacy assessment. So our third graders actually just last week took the first round of the new ELA test for Ohio, and they did them all online. And that actually went off without a hitch. No problems whatsoever did we have with the third grade. And thanks in large part to the work that Mrs. LeGault put into making sure everybody knew what they were supposed to do and where to be and all of those things, and Mr. Penny and Cody as well. Very helpful in getting that going. The other piece that is actually being tested right now, we have a group of freshmen and sophomores who are taking an Algebra 1 assessment starting tomorrow and the next day. And the reason for that is because of, as we've been moving towards this idea of graduation points in Ohio and not doing OGT for those students who are in the graduating classes of 2018 and beyond, they have to accumulate graduation points. And as such, they are required to take certain tests and of course assessments. Last year, when we were getting our ducks in a row for testing and everything, the state had not yet decided what to do about kids who took content before the ninth grade. So we were first told that they thought they just weren't gonna have to take it at all and they would get 3 points towards graduation. Then the next thing that we heard by spring was, 3 points, maybe that wasn't fair because some people thought they should get more than 3 points, so they would get whatever grade they got in the course. And so if they got an A in the course, they would get 5 points towards graduation, but if they got a D in the course, they'd only get 1 point towards graduation. Then it was finalized this fall that they would need to take those tests. Well, the only group that affects is students who had Algebra 1 type content prior to their freshman year. So in their freshman year, they took geometry. There's about 9 freshmen and 20-some sophomores, and so they all are taking this Algebra 1 test tomorrow. Mrs. Finney, who's sitting in the back, has been very instrumental in getting them the resources that they need and giving them practice to make sure that they feel comfortable with that. We don't have any doubts that those students are going to do well on that test. They've already had the Algebra 1 content. They're already working on higher level content right now. It's just not a great time. The decision was made to go ahead and do it now because our only choice was they could take it now or they could take it in April and May when they're taking all of those other tests and having final exams. And so we felt like this was the right time. We don't choose necessarily the dates that we choose within a window that Ohio gives us. So that's why that is. If you'll click on the graduation points piece, I'll give you a quick update about how graduation points are figured. This is actually in the second issue of the Curriculum Connection. And if you go down a few pages, I'll go to the page that shows this. I'll keep going. See all those great science pictures? maybe not. I'll go back up.
Your error right there.
Okay, great, thanks. Sorry about that. There it is. Okay, so as you can see, these are the courses that students are required to take the state end of course exam, and their scores on that total up to points for graduation. So these are the kids who no longer take the OGT. Our current juniors and seniors are under OGT standards. Everybody else is under this. So they are required to take an English 1 and an English 2 exam, Algebra 1, Geometry, American History, American Government, and Physical Science or Biology. And that's a whole different story that I'm probably not going to get into right now. but from those exams, I did it again. Okay. From those exams, I'll just scroll down a little. They can get up to 5 points per exam. Okay, so having the highest range, the advanced gets a 5, and the lowest gets a 1. They are to accumulate 18 points to be eligible for graduation out of a total of 35 points. They could get up to 35 points. But the kicker to all of that is 4 of those points have to come from math, 4 of them have to come from English, and 6 have to come from science and social studies combined, okay? So it's not just, I could blow the English ones out of the water and not really have to worry about much else. I've got to get 4 from math as well, okay? So just so you're kind of versed on what that is.
So where do you see that in, like when you do progress book, you see their grades, but where do you see the points?
Okay, so that would happen when you get your report back, and actually, I'll show you a little picture in this same issue. See how informative the Curriculum Connection really is?
I missed that.
Oh, no. There it is. Okay. So these are the performance levels.
Yeah, I got that.
So when your student gets back their parent reports and it says what level they are, they're advanced, accelerated, those are the points that accompany that. Right now, we are only keeping track of that in a spreadsheet at the high school. However, Maveca, Dazzle, they're working towards having an application for all of their clients to keep track of those graduation points so that you will always be aware of how many points you've accumulated. But right now, we're just manually keeping track of that information. We only have one class of students so far to keep track of, so it's not that cumbersome, but it will be in the future, and that's why we depend on an application to help us. Any other questions about the graduation piece? If you go back to the slideshow. We are still waiting on the final reports of all of our testing. The information that I gave you is still a couple months ago is still the most updated information that we have. It's kind of important also, though, to realize that while proficient is passing in Ohio now, they have what they call college and career readiness scores, which means you need to be in the advanced and accelerated categories to be considered in that college and career readiness area. So we will start seeing schools talking a lot more about not just how many kids passed, but how many scored in the college and career readiness areas. And then also, as Mr. Detweiler mentioned before, this year for the first time, and I do organize all the district testing, we have now another test that we're going to have to keep track of, which is, of course, the test for English language learners, because there are state tests involved with that as well. The Madison Plains Improvement Plan, this is the web page for that, that I'm sure you're all familiar with. We've done some updates to that page, and if you go ahead and click on that link, I can show you. At any point, you can kind of keep up with what's going on. If you click here on the goals and focus plans, as you know, we have four goals that we're working towards, and we have written out very focused plans in English, language arts, and math. Soon, probably in January, we're going to be adding to that, because they're in draft stages right now, our focus plan for communication, our focus plan for environment, and then also a focus plan for professional development. And so those are always accessible to anyone right here on the website. Here, if you click here, you can see all the different ways that we use to monitor our improvement process and how what we're doing to make sure everything's getting done that is supposed to be done that will lead us to that progress. And so there's even a Gantt chart available there that you can look at any point and see where we are in the process and how we're doing towards those things. And then there's other meeting templates. All of our teachers can go, see, I was just trying to go real quick through stuff. all of our teachers and administrators, everybody can access any of the agendas right here on the page too. And then clicking on each one of these links, which were already set up, we've just done some updates behind, you can find out more information on each of those teams. And that's something that's managed under my department as well, is the monitoring of each of our TBTs, our BLTs, the DLT, and what progress we're making towards our improvement plan. Gifted programming is a new area that I've taken on this year under the curriculum department. And one of our big focuses has been on parent communication. We've done a lot of parent communication so far this year, sending out notices to parents about what information we already had, getting their feedback about their child and what they see as their children's biggest needs and characteristics of their learning. We've had a parent information night. Actually, it was two. We split it up over the two parent-teacher conference nights. And so parents could choose which ones they wanted to come to. And between the two nights, we had more than 100 parents and students come out to hear about what we're doing with gifted programming and wanting to be involved. And I'd say that 100 is probably a conservative estimate. It was probably closer to 120 or so. Both rooms, we did one night here in this room, one night over in the high school library. Both rooms were packed. There was standing room only on both those nights. So parents are certainly interested in one. And so far, what we found is very appreciative of the efforts that we're making there. Mrs. Finney and I did a mad race through writing 118 WEPs, or WAPs as you would call them. In the gifted world, that is the equivalent of an IEP. So when you think about students who are our special education students and they have to have individual education plans, all of our gifted students who are receiving services, which is different than special education students are required to receive services, gifted students not required. So of all of them actually receiving services, there are 118 students. The difference between a WEP and a WAP is one is a written education plan. The other is the written acceleration plan. Right now we only have those in math for 8th and 9th graders because they're doing math at a grade level above, those students who are doing math at a grade level above. And coming up next will be a whole program evaluation piece to look at what we've done so far this year and what are our plans for future years there. So that's been a great deal of work as well, but it's been very rewarding because, again, that's another one of those things that we get emails back from kids thanking us for what we're doing there. Grading practices. that's another big project that's coming out of the curriculum department this year. We have a grading practices committee formed. There are representatives from each of the four buildings. Myself, Mrs. LaGault, and Dr. Unger are all on that committee. The group has been working diligently on, they've met four times now, and they usually, so they put in about 8 hours of work together, besides the outside work that has happened. And they have a really good draft, it's not finished, it's still a draft, late work, missing work policy. We still have a few issues left to hash out with that, but we're going to go ahead and move into the next stage, which is trying to come up with a policy on how we average a quarterly grade. That's all over the place in our district. You know, some teachers may be counting homework as 30% of the grade, others are counting it as 5%, somebody else may be counting it as 50% of the grade. So just trying to get some consistency on how we do that. So that'll be the next piece. Hopefully by the end of January, both those top pieces will be out to our staff in a final form. By March is when we expect to have recommendations to the superintendent on the next three issues. Computing a final average, how a semester exam should be weighted within a final average. That's an issue that we all know needs to be addressed, and so our committee will be researching what other school districts are doing, comparing it to what we're doing, trying to come up with a good recommendation to propose to Mr. Detweiler. We're also going to be considering weighted courses. Now, after this evening, sounds like that issue is going to be a little more complicated than I thought it had been, but that's okay because we deal with complications just fine. But that is definitely something that we will be addressing and making recommendations on that. And then, of course, grade card reporting. Right now, as you know, quarterly grades are only reported as percentages, and we'll be discussing should that be moved to an alpha grade, and if it is moved to an alpha grade, should a plus or minus be considered. As I said before, we have representation of staff on this grading practices committee. In January, as we move into the bottom three issues there, we are adding a parent to that committee. I've already discussed this with her. She's an established member of that committee. She's going to be starting with us in January. And then we're going to be looking at bringing in 1 to 2 students to also weigh in on those issues. I think the student piece is really good because I think there needs to be a lot more education as to why certain things are the way they are and why they may need to change. A lot of misconceptions over what colleges are looking for, what they're not looking for, not just had by students and parents, but even by some of our staff and administration. I have collected profiles on 15 different school districts in Central Ohio as to what they're doing with these three issues, so we can compare what we're doing with what they are doing, as well as I am reaching out to about 5 or 6 universities, colleges and universities, to hear directly from them, their admissions offices, what are they really looking for when it comes to GPA, weighted courses, all of those things, the way those universities will be chosen, and that work will start the week after Christmas break, is by looking at our students and where they've been applying to colleges and what are some of the most popular schools that our students are applying to. And I don't mean accepted to. They may not be getting accepted to those colleges and universities, but where is it that our kids want to be, and comparing what they're looking for into what we're doing as well. And sharing that information, of course, with the Grading Practices Committee so that we can make some recommendations to the superintendent. So our goal is to have those recommendations to him by March, so that then should he propose anything to you, you'll have time for first and second readings for those. Professional development is another area that comes out of the curriculum department. A lot of work has been put on developing a focus plan, as I mentioned, with the improvement process, making sure that our professional development is well planned out ahead of time, and that we're all aware of what we're working towards. There's been a big focus this year on our TBTs, and also on Response to Intervention, RTI. And we have been training coaches, seven teachers in our district, to be RTI coaches. And I'm working with them primarily through that as the professional development piece. The actual process of RTI is under the supervision of the principals, but as far as the developing our coaches and our teachers to be able to work through the process, that comes through professional development, which is something, another area that I manage.
What is RTI, Karen?
Response to Intervention.
And what does that mean?
Okay, so response to intervention is when a student may be struggling in the class or maybe not pushed, challenged far enough in a class. It could also be about behaviors. There are a number of things. Executive functioning, which means like all those pieces that keep you organized and keep you making the right decisions and on the right path. All of those things could come under RTI, and so that would be it's a referral system for kids who need help, whether they need more challenging or they need more remediation, and how we get them the help that they need. And then the other piece that we're going to be considering under our focus plan is an approval process for professional development. Right now, we don't actually have a process in place. When a teacher has a PD that they want to attend outside of the district or proposing an idea, the process is they talk to their principal and they talk to me. And if we approve it, then they can go. We have a professional development budget, but we don't have any of that money allocated in any certain direction. It's just as people have proposals of PD that they'd like to go to, we look to see if we have enough money to send them. We need to be looking towards, should we be divvying up that budget to certain, department-wise, so that there's equity among our departments and what professional development funds they have. Also, considering attendance rates, if that's something we need to consider or not, and looking at, are we fairly allowing people opportunities for professional development. In some cases, someone may take 10 professional development days in a year, where someone else may not take any. There are no preconceived ideas of what the approval process will be, just looking at whether or not we need one, and then if we do, establishing one. So, I didn't touch on all of these areas, just because time did not allow, and look how far I went over. And but there's still plenty more to be talked about, but that's what I just wanted to give you an update tonight. So are there any questions for me?
Obviously, curriculum department is very busy. A lot going on. Yeah. And I thank you for that, Karen. Next up, we have Mr. Penny talk about technology and a slew of other items.
Yes, I'll do my best to be thoroughly succinct. So I'll be thorough, but try to be as succinct as possible for you. With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and split my time up a little bit. The first part I'm going to tackle, I'm sure you're aware through Mr. Detweiler communicating with you, about our emergency operation plan and with us working on that. Also, so I'm going to tackle that first, and then we're going to move on to the technology component. Let's see. Well, I might
have technology first.
I think we need to work on the technology portion first, I guess. Where'd you go, Todd? There we go. Okay, so we're going to begin with our emergency safety plan. With that being said, the safety plan, as a lot of people refer to our current plan we have, is the overarching. So, for instance, if you're in transportation, you have safety protocols you go through on the bus. What I'm here to talk about tonight, though, is the emergency operation plan within the safety plan. So, with that being said, I won't be able to go into specifics. And here's why. I'll be going over the process, but not actually the functional annexes and how we carry out the different protocols. Ultimately, that's because we're at a public meeting and a public forum. And I can't go into, for instance, how we execute an active shooter situation, fire, so forth, especially on the active shooter side, things like that, threats from the outside, just because, like I said, it's public. But the purpose for this tonight is pretty much get you acclimated, if you aren't already acclimated, to what the point is of the emergency operation plan, and also how we're actually going to leverage it in a more productive way than we have in the past to make it so it's much more functional for the teachers and staff to carry out in case of an emergency. With that being said, I believe last January we endeavored on the path of actually redoing our current crisis plan, which is turned an emergency operation plan, because it was updated in 2012, but hadn't had a formal overhaul since 2007. With that being said, we have to evolve in times, you know, such as today. Los Angeles United Schools actually had to evacuate today due to a bomb threat. Now, there's always been bomb threats, but they seem to be more of a commonplace. So, in conjunction with Homeland Security, the Department of Education, Ohio Department of Education, we started in January working on a new template to actually bring our plan up into, I guess, the current trends, current days. With that being said, the inside of the plan covers a few different areas. First, general information. Okay, so general information about the district. This plan is housed at not just the Sheriff's Department, Fire Department, Homeland Security has a copy of it, as well as the EMA. So they need to know about our district. We internally know about our district, but outsiders coming in that might be supporting us in an emergency situation may not. So that's one part of a component of the plan. Also, who the contact people are, who the incident commanders are. For instance, each building has an incident commander and an assistant incident commander. Okay. Then it goes into functional annexes. Functional annexes are actually, for instance, what do we do in case of a fire? What do we do in case of an active shooter? What do we do in the case of tornadoes? So forth. Okay. So that's really the meat and potatoes of this plan. These plans are going to be housed in the office of every single building. Now, this is a shift a little bit from what we've done in the past. I already mentioned our partnerships through that. In the past, everyone had the full-blown emergency operations plan or crisis plan, as it was called. The challenge with that is it sat on bookshelves in classrooms, for instance. And if there was an emergency, it was really difficult for someone to real quick, you know, in a fight or flight situation, say, hey, I'm going to run back and get that binder to see what I need to do in this situation. So what we've done is we went ahead and we created a subset of the emergency operation plan called the Crisis Reference Ready Reference Guide, or Crisis Response Ready Reference Guide. And what this does is it actually allows for staff, whether teaching staff or whatever staff is in the situation, to be able to quickly go and find out what the solution is to that problem. Okay. Obviously, the incident commander will be announcing over the speaker, you know, what protocols we need to follow. But for instance, if we're going to a lockdown, especially during a fight or flight situation, it might be, well, what do I do? What do I do in this situation? Well, with this guide here, as you have them in front of you, you can just flip over to lockdown, and I'll give you the basic protocols to carry this out. So what we've done is we've taken something that was a tool to us, but because it wasn't used very frequently, thank God, and sat on a shelf, we were able to convert it over to this flip chart, okay, based on the new emergency operation plan. These will be readily available. Instead of being assigned to individuals, they're actually going to be assigned to spaces. So, for instance, classrooms, you know, offices, places like that, and we're going to put them right inside the doors. So that way, for instance, if you're in the hallway and a situation arises, you can just go and count on the fact that they're going to be hung next to the door to be able to grab that and then proceed. Okay? So one thing that came out of this whole emergency operation plan, adoption, is the fact we were able to redo our building floor plans and maps. Up to this point, believe it or not, we did not have very good floor plans drafted. That's something that I went ahead and put into place was a redrawing to scale of our buildings here. the intermediate, elementary, junior high, we had decent ones from when we put in these modulars, and then the high school. And not just for the sake of this plan, but also for the sake of any time we have contractors come in or other projects, the first question we always have asked is, hey, can we have a floor plan? Hey, can we have a schematic of your buildings? Now, these aren't blueprints, but there are some things to scale to allow actual people come in and do these type of jobs for us. Before, we had to kind of look at them and say, well, we kind of have these floor plans, they're not to scale, and it's really hard to do bids and so forth. I won't get on that tangent. But with that being said, that's something that was updated. Now, along with this update, we're going to go ahead and also look at doing additional signage for the rooms. If you walk through the high school, intermediate school, well, pretty much any of the schools, there's random name designations or nameplates around the district as far as design. We're going to go ahead and put proper nameplates in. Another thing we're going to do is, for first responders, is all doors that are exterior doors will have numbers on them. So that way, let's say, for instance, there's an incident, and door two is the one that's been breached, and we need first responders to come to door two, so forth. They will know that where that is based on the floor plan and map, and also just based on designation when they arrive. Okay. So I try to keep that succinct as possible, and I think that's part of the stumbling block I had, because I like to elaborate, as you all know. With that being said, is there any questions on this part of this? And I wish I'd go more into detail, and if you're interested in an executive session or a different forum, I could do that. I just can't.
This is great.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really nice, but we didn't do anything, any plans to train some people, train people on some of this stuff?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. Initially, we've had staff meetings with the teachers, and that was this last week, I believe. Is that correct, Kim? With that being said, we still need to go through and talk to our classified staff. We'll be talking about custodians, talking to custodians and maintenance staff next week, because they have different procedures they have to carry out. And then we'll talk to food service, aides, and transportation.
Now, when it comes to training, what I'm getting at is there are certain areas on this that need to be trained.
Exactly.
We need to train as a district. For instance, this active shooter hostage situation and shootings. That's something you don't want somebody in here doing a flip chart. What should I do? And there's somebody out there shooting in the hallway.
I agree. So that's what I was getting to with. We're actually in coordination right now. For instance, we have an admin meeting tomorrow morning. We'll be talking a little bit more about this. And it's actually coordinating dates and times when we can fit this type of training in, along with professional development for the education side. By state mandate, there are certain things that we do have to now have trainings on. We have to have so many fire drills, so many rapid response drills, and so forth. So the principals are abreast of that. And that's something as an overall district we're going to look at. With that being said, this emergency operation plan that's now in place, or going into place January 1st, it has spots for updates. So for instance, we know since this was a complete revision, there might be things we have to tweak to fit our puzzle better. The challenge is, for instance, the active shooter situation, it's such a dynamic situation, it's hard to tell where they're coming from. So you really just have to prepare people with best practices. And those are the type of things that, for instance, they send me out to Homeland Security training, things like that, Ohio University, to assist with. So does that help answer your questions? Maybe it might be an update you want later as far as where we are with that.
I think
this is great.
Mr. Hunter's asking the proper question. The history shows we were exposed. Mm-hmm. We didn't have something like this. As Joe pointed out, we had the big red binder. It was nice. It was a really good document. But it wasn't something you could use quickly and on the fly. The hope is, as the staff learns this document, then they'll be able to react appropriately. If you notice, one of the things that's consistent throughout here as well is the pressure that's on the principals. Throughout, the principal's making the call on just about everything in here. It's not the superintendent, it's not, you know, technology director or the treasurer, it's the principals. So it puts a heavy load on them, so it behooves them to make sure their staff has the proper training. When they do say we're in a lockdown, they know what to do. But this is, we had to get to this point so we can take those next steps. We were, like I said, we were very exposed. We were all very nervous about that until we got this. Another piece, Joe, is you also worked with the Madison County EMA,
yes,
correct?
Okay. Yes, worked Madison County EMA, Sheriff's Department, Fire Department, EMS, EMD, the Emergency Squad, ultimately. Homeland Security came out and met with us. We know, I mean, just by training, I don't have a tactical background. That's not where my background is. my background is providing leadership and taking what they had through these meetings and the template the state had and massaging it to the puzzle here at Madison Plains and what's best for our students and staff. So,
gotcha.
Any other questions? Okay. So, technology update. Back in, I believe it was May, I came to you discussing the E-rate dollars that we're getting for wireless and wired networking. And I just wanted to be able to come to you today and say that we have completed that project. The project was completed with a 2% overage. For this size project, that's a very successful financial endeavor, I guess you could say. With that being said, the quality and experience, as you can tell just from tonight, when Karen was going out to website and so forth, everything's instantaneous. Okay. The experience that the students are experiencing as well as the staff. Honestly, I guess what it's come down to is a lot of times people say, hey, is there a way to speed this up? Is there a way we can get things faster? No one asks me that question anymore. Now, I'm sure a few years from now, as things change, things evolve, I'll have that question asked of me again. But at this point, I rarely ever have that question since we put this network in. For instance, we had a 900% increase in capacity speed on our actual network backbone. And I won't get into all that, but ultimately, that's what interconnects our buildings now and then starts to connect us out to the outside. Our wireless network, we had a 500% increase in actual bandwidth. So, with that being said, our testing, everything's going well. We didn't have any problems with throughput on that. And then, as we go forward talking about that, the impact on educational opportunities. Since we have all this extra capacity now, we can use it to support future curricular endeavors. You know, options for curriculum if we wanted to streamline more to electronic resources. And what it does is it just opens up the gate for us. One thing I'd like to remind you on this is this project was actually funded at about 53% by the federal government through our E-rate dollars. Okay. Next, I'll move on to the copy and print infrastructure. We just did a rollout of a whole new copy and print infrastructure. Our chosen vendor was Ricoh. Okay, we were already in a contract with Ricoh. We went ahead and decided to adopt a year early because of the advantages we had by doing so. Okay, the staff and student impact, and honestly, this was our primary focus. Okay, there was a focus put on dollars. There always has to be. But if it's a solution that doesn't actually work or isn't something that improves the situation for staff in day-to-day and students, then there's not really a point in doing it. So, the things that have been drastic improvements, at least from the staff I've heard from. Now, like anything else, with us rolling in something new, it's change. So it's funny how the first week it rolled in, there's people said, I don't really like this. And the same people are coming to me now saying, this is a great solution. One of the things is Follow You Printing. You say, well, what's Follow You Printing? Well, Follow You Printing is where you don't have 10 different printers on your desktop that you're going to try to print to. You have one. You print to that, and you can go anywhere in the district that has a copier, take your key fob, which you already use for your doors, and get your document. Okay? You don't have to worry about, oh, well, I printed that to the wrong printer. Or, I printed that, and now I'm in a whole other meeting because I have a meeting in the district meeting room here, and I'm from the high school. What do I do? Well, I have to reprint it again, which causes waste also, because before that would just sit on the copiers. Now they just go across the hall, fob in, takes a matter of seconds, and they release their print jobs. Print security is another huge one. I've had many people say, hey, you know, I was always concerned when I printed out some type of assessment or test, or something I didn't want anyone else to see, for instance, students' confidential information, IEPs, things like that. I had to run real quick to that copier and make sure no one sees it. Now with the Follow You Printing and the print release, it doesn't actually release until they release it with their key fob. So that way no one sees it, it's just a great thing. And Scan-to-Me printing, or Scan-to-Me printing, the Scan-to-Me. which ultimately, when they scan in with their fob, or if you're a student, because students don't have fobs, they have pin numbers, which is the same as their lunch pin number. We went ahead and piggybacked on that so people didn't have to learn something new. They just use what they already had, whether it be fobs or pins. And when you log in, the machine knows it's you. So for instance, your email address pops up instantly, and you're able to scan directly to your email. Okay, you say, well, Joe, you probably could scan before. Well, here's the thing, it was restricted to only people that had been entered in that machine, or, for instance, if you're at the high school, you have 50 other names in there you have to scroll down through. Now, the minute you fob in or use a pin, you have your email right there and you're ready to send it back. Okay? So those are some of the things that have been impacting to the staff and students. There's a few others, but those are the ones that are really out there. Okay? Now, with that being said, those were our focal points, but there has been a financial impact also. Okay? There will be, let's put it that way. Okay? And the reason I put the dollar sign up there, or the dollar up there with the smiley face, is just because it's a win-win situation for Madison Plains. We're able to provide these additional services that we couldn't provide, like the file you printing, the print schedule security, and the scan to me. But at the same time, by doing away with some of the waste, for instance, everyone's guilty of it at times, having all the different printers printing 50-page, 60-page documents to the wrong printer, never picking them up, and not meaning to, it's just accidental. Or, for instance, another situation that will definitely help the district in this is, it's less about tracking the people that are printing, and it's more, for instance, looking, and once we look at the reports, there's a boatload of reports, saying, you know, if they need to do that much printing in that classroom, do we need to look at a curricular material? Do we need to look at an actual workbook? Is it cost-effective to have them print, or is it more cost-effective to have them actually purchase a workbook or electronic resource that would take the place of that? So that's really the intent with this solution. Another thing is with the overall negotiation of the contract, and I worked with Todd with this thoroughly. Todd and I'm sorry I didn't introduce you earlier on this. You and I worked on this probably for about 4 or 5 months together. We were able to get the actual copier rates per impression down a few hundredths of a cent, which is actually a lot when in regards to, you know, when you do this much volume. The other thing is, with the actual authentication-based printing with the key fobs and not having it automatically spit out, we talked to Rico and they said, we have other districts and we have universities on this system. With that being said, they usually see around 18 to 20% less consumption of impressions as well as impressions or prints. That's the reason why I'm calling them impressions, because you can do both sides. But 18 to 20% less usage or impression rate for their organizations once they put this solution in. And it's ultimately not the human, it's not about the human behavior as far as printing less, it's just about the, we're not going to take and print and then not know where it is. Also, another thing that's a financial impact as well as, there's all kinds of small things. So for instance, all the paper that we were recycling when prints came out and we weren't using them, and I'm sure our custodians are very happy now that they don't have to go out to the recycling bin, dump them in there. And you say, well, Joe, that's probably not too many. Well, I'm not saying it was a boatload, but over time, you know, it's a fair amount. I guess the final thing I'll say about this, and this is in regards to that 18 to 20%, we'll be looking at, if it pans out the same way for us, around $4,800 to $5,000 better off based on this solution. And this is a 5-year contract, so you can do the math on that. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and move to what we're actually doing. Those are things we had done. These are things that we are looking at doing.
Joe, before you move on, can I just add
yes,
real quick?
Yes, please
that?
Do.
I think one thing that was really important financially, too, we were able to use technology that we already had, whether it be PIN numbers students already had through the lunch line or their point-of-sale system, or the key fobs that we have for the doors. And Rico really did a great job of taking almost a proprietary system in the door fob and making sure that it worked for our copiers here so that we didn't have to buy additional RFID cards or swipe cards or anything like that. So that was a savings to the district too. And it also eased the transition because it's something that staff is already familiar with. You're familiar with fobbing in and out of doors. Now you're also familiar with fobbing in and out of the computer, or the printer, sorry. So I think that was one other financial concern, as well as a transition and ease of, you know, we didn't want to introduce something totally unfamiliar. So they're familiar with RICO and the screens that are already there. They're familiar with the fobs at the doors. Now they're familiar with using the two together. So I mean, it really was. I think it's been a great transition. It was a long process, but we ended up, I think, where we wanted to be. So.
Thanks, Zay, and that was very well said. I guess with that being said, also, there's a few pain points we're going through, but they're minimizing as the weeks go on, and honestly, they're more on the human side, and we're just figuring out how to overcome. There's things that we didn't know. For instance, there's certain organizations that may have been copying we had no idea about. Well, they don't have fobs, so we had to figure out how to, you know, is that appropriate use of the copier, and then on top of that, if it is, then do we get them a fob? Do we pin number them? So forth.
And then the one last thing, I know Joe said the hundredths of a cent that we got reduced on the per impressions, it doesn't seem like a lot, but the other thing is, anytime you can keep costs from going up is a great thing. Mm-hmm. And then also the true cost, you know, the larger cost is in the paper. You know, so when we have 5,000 sheets of paper in a case and we order 500 cases of paper a year, mm-hmm. you know, if we can reduce that paper usage, even a small amount, that adds up to quite a bit.
So. And that went into that $4,800 to $5,000 per year. So. Okay. Contract and service evaluation. This is something that at least technology department does on a yearly basis, and I believe most or all departments should or are doing this. This year we have email archiving on our life cycle, so we need to evaluate whether our email archiving solution is doing what it needs to do as well as is still feasible, cost effective. Phone system is something that's going to be coming up. It's time for its 5-year review. We also need to make sure that we're getting the best value with what we have. And then the third thing is we're up on contract for our website, and that's design, hosting, and service. And that won't solely be the technology department looking at that. That's going to be the overall communication team, whoever Mr. Detweiler decides that he's going to have on that team to look at that, if there is a team to do so. Okay. The website, that's a major, all those up there, especially the bottom two, are major projects. If you just think about the website, and you just saw what Karen's done on there, changing platforms as well as taking and trying to get all the information moved over, is a very, very, very large endeavor. There's a lot of things on there that you don't realize how deep it goes. So, is there any questions on the technology side? Okay. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. I think it's good that we hear from our district administrator, because a lot of times, you know, principals are the face. They're out there and working with the staff every day, but behind the scenes, if these folks weren't doing what they have to do and what, you know, we all work as a district administrator to get done, their jobs would be much more difficult, most impossible. So, Karen and Joe, thank you very much. A couple of things I want to point out.
Throw up that picture.
Good news from the weekend. Just got a picture today from Tammy Pitstick. Ken Schaefer was
Woo-hoo!
Number one seventh grader, beat out all seventh graders in the Power of the Pen competition.
All right.
Awesome. So it was a great day. We'll ask him to come in January
yes.
to the board meeting, but I just wanted to throw that up there because I thought that was outstanding. So.
Awesome. And then if I can pipe in over the weekend, our Lego robotics teams, both of our teams, one of our teams qualified for district, so they'll be going back January 16th to St. Clair College. There were 24 teams, and they took the top 7.
Right.
And we were the only public school there. Everybody else are clubs that are meeting at like museums, or they're in STEM schools. We were the only public school there. And at that competition as well, they have an award called a Gracious Professionalism Award that's given to the students by their peers there or by the judges because of how the students interact with each other and with everyone else. And they gave out 4 of those to 4 teams. 2 of those came back to our 2 teams.
Right.
That's cool.
That so. Happened before, too. Did we get
we have had the
like
gracious professionalism 1 other time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But that's
we'll
what we want to
bring those kids in, too.
Too, right?
I'm sorry?
We'll be able to have them in here in January,
yes.
too, right?
Yeah.
We'll either January night.
Right.
It makes or meeting will happen before their district competition, so just kind of where you want to go with that. And then, so that was definitely a good move for them. The kids
great.
Improved, also doubled scores from what they'd ever previously done.
That concludes my report.
Great conclusion, all right. Awesome. Okay. Thank you. We will move on to unfinished business. We have none. New business? Shanae.
Madam President. Oh.
Go ahead.
Madam President, I move by the recommendation of the superintendent that the board approve the first reading of the following board policies: IKF, graduation requirements, JECBB, admission of inter-district transfer students.
I'll second that.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board approve the second and final reading of the following board policies as presented.
Second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent that the board accept the resignation of Colleen Bennett as a quick recall advisor effective December 3rd, 2015.
I'll second that.
Discussion.
Ms. Bennett decided that she didn't think she'd have time to do what was required of that, and Stormy stepped up, and they actually won their first meet against Jamestown, so congratulations on that.
Right on. Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board accept the resignation of Molly Neese as science club advisor, a 50-50 split, effective November 29th, 2015.
Second. Discussion.
Both of these, number 4 and 5, they had decided to share it, then they both decided that no, they didn't want to do it. So Dr. Unger's back to square one.
Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of superintendent, the board accept the resignation of Michelle Hildebrandt as science club advisor, the 50-50 split, effective November 23rd, 2015.
Second.
Discussion. Well, I have a question. So they're both science club advisors. One resigned effective November 29th and the other one the 23rd. That just the
when
dates.
They got their letters.
Okay. All right, call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board award the following academic supplemental contracts to be paid in accordance with the adopted negotiated contract for the 2015-2016 school year. They are listed below.
Discussion?
Yeah. The second one there, how's that not an athletic?
Flag corps.
Supplemental. I don't care. I just want to make sure you don't do this the wrong way. I mean, is this the way?
It's a supplemental.
It
typically is done, or?
To be honest, whether it says academic or athletic up here, the supplemental is what you're approving.
Okay.
Right. So we're okay either way.
I mean, that one just seemed
honestly,
odd being there. I don't know why.
Technically, in the future, we could take out academic or athletic and just present supplementals.
Okay.
Because they're not broken out. The contract as this is an athletic, this is a, you know, academic. They're just supplemental contracts. So you're fine as far as that goes.
Do we have a second?
Yeah, we have a second.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent and board award the following athletic supplemental contracts to be paid in accordance with the adopted negotiated contract for the 2015-16 school year as listed.
I'll second that.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent that the board approve the following athletic supplemental contract to be paid in accordance with the document negotiated contract for the 2015-16 school year for Jake Dotz, assistant wrestling coach.
I'll second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Abstain.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve the addition of Amy Nichols to the substitute aid list as presented.
Second.
Discussion?
Amy just obtained her educational aid permit. That's why she wasn't on at the beginning of the year.
Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent that the board approve the resignation and appointment of the following promotes during the library board: Joanne Beard, Joyce Stewart, and Guy Portmuffer.
Sorry.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board employ Melinda Moore as a substitute bus driver effective November 30th, 2015.
Second. Discussion?
Melinda was a full-time driver for us, and she wants to go back to being a sub driver.
Okay. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board employ Carol Vergy on a 109-day contract as a bus driver, step zero, effective December 2nd, 2015.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve a leave of absence for Roseanne McAllister, effective October 26, 2015 through January 4th, 2016.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent that the board accept the resignation of Steve Cheney, bus driver, effective upon an assignment of a candidate in the position. Mr. Cheney has served the Madison Plains District for a partial year for the 2014-2015 and 15-16 school years.
Second.
Discussion?
We have another candidate that we're in the final stages of working with them to get them hired. So. That'll take his place. So he agreed to stay on until we get that done.
Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board accept the resignation of Molly Neese as teacher, effective August 12, 2015. Ms. Neese is unable to obtain a required teaching license at this time.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board employ Molly Neese as a long-term substitute teacher in the area of biology, effective August 12, 2015. Ms. Neese will be paid at a daily rate equal to BA Step 0 of the MPEA salary schedule.
I'll second.
Discussion?
She is working diligently to get her alternative license. She's going to take an assessment to get that completed, but she is working on that now. So.
Thank you. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. Madam President, I move upon the recommendation of the superintendent that the board approve the following donation, $138 to go to athletics from A.
I'll second that.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
We'll move to Section K, new agenda items. Are there any new agenda items to present? Okay, we will not have executive session this evening, so we move on to Section M. Next meeting date will be held January 12th at 7, and we have a special meeting on January 21st.
Madam President, I move to adjourn the meeting at 8:36.
Second. Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. We are adjourned.
We adjourn.